The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 174. A few quick announcements before we jump into this week's episode. If you haven't already, please take a moment, pause this episode, and leave us a 5-star rating and review. It helps us out a lot, helps us get in front of more people. And so I look forward to hearing your review. And if you do leave a 5-star rating and review, not only will I read it out on the show, if you email me, my email is in the show notes, I will reply back with a free training on how to find and evaluate properties. And so if you're someone who's maybe just starting out, you're not sure what numbers to look at on investment properties, how to calculate if it's profitable, things of that nature, I think this training will be very, very helpful to you. So I look forward to hearing from you. Another announcement is that I have officially launched applications for my out-of-state money real estate coaching program. And so if you are someone who lives in an expensive market, maybe you live in New York or Miami or somewhere in California, et cetera, and you cannot afford to buy investment properties where you currently live, this program is going to show you how to invest in more affordable markets to get the direct support, coaching, and accountability you need to get that first property. And I'm going to help you do just that. And so if you're interested in that program, the link to the application is in the show notes below. And so looking forward to hopefully reviewing your application and getting you into the program and helping you get to your goal. So excited about this episode with my guys, Nigel Sidnor and Wynn Willis. Long time coming to get this episode done, but I'm so appreciative that these brothers decided to come on the show. They are real estate developers out in Baltimore. It's an amazing story, extremely, extremely transparent episode. So without further ado, fam, let's get into it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Before we get into this episode, if you're on audio, make sure you leave us a 5-star rating and review. If you're on YouTube, make sure you like, make sure you subscribe, make sure you share this episode with someone. I'm very excited about this episode. Here with me today, I have Nigel Sidnor and Wynn Willis. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Glad to be here, man. Glad to be here. Very excited.
Thank definitely. You. Long time coming.
Yeah.
Like 6 months coming.
That's right. That's right.
Definitely, definitely. Well, let's just start off with some introductions. Let the people know who you are and what you do. And Nigel, we can start with you.
Yeah, perfect. So my name is Nigel Sidnor, born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland. Had the privilege of just really falling in love with real estate ever since I was a kid. My reward from my mom was that, you know, if you do the right thing, she'll take me to like where the rich people live, right? So she would take me to these big houses. I think it was called Governor's Run back in Baltimore. So I saw like these big single family homes and just always said, you know, I want one of these to be mine one day. So wasn't really sure how I was going to navigate the real estate world. But man, I made sure I was in my best behavior to see some of those beautiful houses. So that led me down a path of, I met Winfield, right? I met Winfield growing up, which I'm sure that'll come out in how our dynamic is and how we met. But ultimately, I had the opportunity to work for a company called Realty Mogul. And I was on the investor relations side of the business, learning some of the different ways they built their infrastructure, seeing people invest $50,000, $100,000 plus into some of these different deals. And I said, I'm excited to get my own, right? I'm excited to have my own deal that people can invest in. So here we are.
definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, so I'm a real estate developer from Baltimore, Maryland, and really been running a family-owned company for about 7 years. We have appraisal, company, residential, commercial, as well as, you know, single family, multifamily development. So like similar to Nigel, I watched my family, my father do it and build one of, when I look at it, it's probably one of the most prestigious neighborhoods, in Baltimore City still. And just watching that, like most people, when you see a great man and he happens to be your father, you say, I want to be like him. Right. So a lot of my journey has been, in a sense, chasing that, you know, I want to be like my role model, as well as I want to help my city. Right. So I think one of the main things of just who we are as individuals, as teams, just really people that have service. Right. So that's one of the number one things I think that we are about. That thing, you know, just about how we impact everything that we do in our city.
Definitely. So the first thing I want to talk about is Baltimore. You know, Baltimore gets a bad rap in the media and people really don't know how great of a city it is, how much opportunity there is in real estate and otherwise. So as natives and guys who are developing in Baltimore, I would just love if y'all could talk about the city a little bit from the perspective of somebody who's actually there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll just go through a brief description, right? And we'll see if people like the city, right? If I told you that if you're a person who needed a job, that you can make over $100,000 a year, and that is our average area median income. If I told you that we have three of the best medical schools and they're all in Baltimore City, you would say, hey, I want to come and be a medical school. If we have the number one research institution for health globally, that would be a place you want to be. If I told you that all your headquarters of government agencies are there, a port is there, three airports within an hour, you would tell me it was Washington, D.C. That's what you would tell me, right? But the truth of the matter is all those assets and those opportunities are in Baltimore. And then the last thing I would say is that why Baltimore is so great. If I could told you that you could get real estate for $50,000, $100,000, and even as a developer going in and buying real estate, which we have done at $150,000, that you can build 50, 60 units on 150 units, even 285 units, you would say, that might be a place where I want to go, right? To invest my money, spend my time, and even live, work, and play. So I think Baltimore has such great aspects, and I think the bad rap is the crime, right? Hey, we have crime, but, you know, statistics show us that crimes are, you know, really in a small portion of Baltimore. We have 250 neighborhoods, and really, at the end of the day, very few of them have high crime rates, especially violent crime. So I think that's the most important thing that I want to, you know, convey about Baltimore, is that there's a plethora of opportunity. And, you know, I think there's a study out there that we're the number one for, you know, equity and opportunity. So being able to be as a young Black developer and go in and not be shunned, it's more normal there than it is other places for us to go and, you know, rise to success.
Definitely, definitely. What you got?
Yeah, for me, it's all about opportunity, right? So I have the privilege of, he does a lot of the technical work. He figures out where we should go within the city. But being from Baltimore, of course, I have a bias, right? I think we have some of the most amazing food in the world, right? But I think that the other side is everyone wants to find a way to get into real estate. It could be short-term rentals. It could be Airbnb. Could be purchasing your first home, right? But I have the privilege of traveling the world, seeing these different concepts, but also meeting so many different people that want to figure out how to navigate the development side of the business and being able to provide opportunity, provide access, provide equity for people to get involved in some of these different deals.
Definitely, definitely. So when you mentioned it being a family business, so I'm just curious to learn more about the business and also you getting involved and then Nigel eventually getting involved as well.
Yeah, so my father started it 40 years ago, primarily doing single family construction, renovated apartment buildings. This is before bigger pockets. This is before we started, you know, it's become more mainstream because of social media and things like that. So I watched as a kid fixing, flipping homes, renovating apartment buildings, putting in infrastructure, you know, parking lots. You know, I remember we did a parking lot for a church, right? So real estate in general, not just in the single family sense, but construction as well. So when I came home from college about 7 years ago, I primarily started in the appraisal business, learning where I think is one of the most valuable things, which is valuation. What is this worth, right? We all want to know what our home is worth. We all want to know what our properties are worth. We all want to know what our dollar is worth today. Like, what are things worth? So I came in, started doing residential appraisals, started doing commercial appraisals, and then eventually we took that money, started putting it back into single family development, and then now moving forward, we were doing multifamily development. And like as a family business, we wanted to keep it in the family, right? But being a little bit more ambitious, we talked about, okay, how can we scale this? And I think this is extremely important because you can't do it without team. And I think that's where Nigel comes in.
Definitely. So what's your role in the business currently, Nigel?
Yeah, so my role is investor relations. My role is to just find people that want to be involved, right? I think that in our community specifically, we typically get involved in real estate once we see a new building going up. Right. So now we're typically on the side of renting or signing a lease in order to be a part of a project. But collectively working with Winfield, I've been able to provide opportunity for people to have access, right? Access being equity, right? So I think so often, you know, we see real estate or we think about the amount of money that you need to put into some of these projects. You say it's insurmountable, right? I have to have hundreds of thousands of dollars like we were doing at Realty Mogul. It's going to cost $30, $40, $50 million to be a part of some of these multifamily deals. Well, what I found is we put our money together so often to go on trips. Or if it was your birthday, we would have a birthday dinner, right? And we'd say, hey, look, the bill is, you know, $1,000. It's three of us, $300 each that covers the bill. Why don't we do that in real estate? Why don't we have a long lasting impact on our community? Why don't we say that, hey, on your birthday this year, we're going to put our money together and we're going to change or we're going to develop in our neighborhood. So that was always my mindset. I've always been a relationship guy, but how do we bring the relationships together and be able to bring good and be able to activate change in the neighborhoods?
Definitely. Definitely. I love that. And so I'm curious to know, you mentioned like keeping it in the family and then eventually Nigel came and brought his expertise and fundraising, things like that. What was that like? Just adding somebody new to the team? Was it like natural? Was there any pushback? Like what was that process like?
It was natural. This is my brother, right? And I don't look at it any different, right? So I think we've had a really unique relationship, mm-hmm. right? Which makes it easy. We've played basketball together, been roommates together, you know, for a very long time. And so I've been in what we can call the trenches and went to war and went to battle and been, you know, at the worst where I've had to stay at his mother's house. He had to stay at mine and we've struggled together. We worked out together. So really our relationship and dynamic really comes from a place where we've practiced this, right? So it's not like a new thing. So I think with my family in particular, it wasn't like, oh, well, you're bringing somebody in that wasn't already in, mm-hmm. right? We already invested in what we do. I'm investing in what he was doing, right? So it was no pushback at all. The only pushback we had was that I didn't know if we wanted to take any, you know, that's a big responsibility, right? Whether it be people, your network, whether it be your auntie, whether it be your best friend, mm-hmm. whether it be the lady down the street, whether it be Miss Jenkins up the block, like, you know, it's a big responsibility taking $1, 50 cents to be able to invest and change community. It's a heavy weight to take on that responsibility. And, you know, I'm happy that Nigel convinced us to do that. And I think that the community at large that we've been able to work with is happy that we're doing it as well. So I think, you know, to have and create lasting change, you need to, you know, really get out your comfort zone. So I think that was us just getting out of the comfort zone, and you need brothers and family to hold you accountable to help you get out your comfort zone.
Definitely, definitely. Nigel, talk more about that convincing that needed to be done, because, you know, you explained it, makes sense.
Yeah.
But what was it like in practice? Like when just trying to say, you know, hey, I think this is a direction we should go and it can help us grow.
Yeah, of course. So, Wynn and I, we've known each other since middle school, right? So we played basketball together and trying to figure, hey, where do you go to high school, right? So as he said, we're battle tested, right? We went to situations that we weren't supposed to survive or thrive into, right? But when it comes down to taking capital and figuring out who are the right partners to even bring in, right? Because all money, as we say, is not good money. I've been begging this dude, right? Since we were in college, I'm like, Wynn, I'm sending them deals. And I don't have the skill set to look at the deal as technical as he does, but I'm like, dude, we got to do this deal. Like, it's Baltimore. It's 50K. You're working. I'm working. We can handle this. It's not really a big risk, right? But he's like, not yet, right? He's like, not yet. Let's not, you know, let's find the right deal, right? And it's all about, when we were coming up and playing sports, what our coach used to always say, you'll either get exposure, you'll get exposed, right? So he was like, look, we still need to do a little bit more work. We need to find the right deal, right? Because like she said, it's a responsibility to bring other people along for the ride. It's a responsibility where we have to be dedicated. Like we've committed our life to this, right? So I'm a firm believer that all of my friends are doing well today, but they'll be doing better in the future. And I want to be a part of the reason why they're doing better. We believe that through our different projects, not only can we create opportunity, but we can create opportunity for you to be able to have that millionaire status, which then will allow you to have that millionaire net worth to be able to now start to see passive income, being able to get a part of some of these different venture deals. We've seen the benefit of what real estate can do in our lives. And based off the impact that it's had on our life, it was a lot easier to convince him and say, hey, look, why don't we start to bring people along for this ride?
Definitely, definitely. And one of the things Wynn was telling me yesterday is there are, I believe, 48 investors, 80% are from Baltimore,
yeah,
and 60% are Black women. Did I get that right? I was listening.
Yes. Yeah.
Talk about that, because that is really significant, just having that many people from the city who believe in what you're doing, and then to have that many women as well, Black women as well.
Yeah, I would say Black women have been the anchor for us, and just trusting us to do the right thing, right? And like I said, it's a real responsibility. And I think, you know, when you have people from the city bringing their money back, if they can't bring their bodies back, I think that's extremely important, because what that means is that there is worth there and people see it. So if I can't convince you of a place that you love to put your money there, how can I convince somebody else who've never been there? Like some of our investors from Houston or from Charlotte or from New Jersey, how can I convince them if you don't believe in it, right? So first, you want to make sure home believes in home, right? And then we can start going out to convince other people. But if we can't have our house in order at first, then it's no way that other people will come in and help us, you know, really rebuild neighborhoods. Right. That's what we're in the business of.
Mm-hmm.
Rebuilding neighborhoods, revitalizing neighborhoods. This is a real service. And I know some people may look at it and say, yeah, you're going to make money. Yeah, of course we are. Right. But that's not the only incentive. Right. It's our job and our duty to not be compliant with the current conditions in our community.
Definitely. Definitely. So we'd love to hear about some of the projects you guys have in the pipeline.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say our premier project, which is, you know, if people want to look up in Baltimore Business Journal, is a 53-unit development in a neighborhood called Irvington, right? This is a, you know, in my opinion, a great neighborhood that's centrally located next to all the major counties, a hospital, St. Agnes Hospital, University of Maryland Baltimore College, located at 95, 12 minutes away from downtown, 12 minutes away from the BWI government contracting area. And then as far as our two federal headquarters, Social Security and Center for Medicare and Medicaid, is about 8 minutes away. So big employment center. There hasn't been any development in 65 years.
Why now, is that?
That's a great question.
Why do you think that is?
That's a great question. I think the biggest reason why it is because we have taken development, which used to be a very entrepreneurial and search for opportunity, and we've really institutionalized it and kind of sanitized it where it only can fit one box and people are no longer being leaders, but they're being followers. So in Baltimore in particular, five neighborhoods receive majority of their development, right? And that, in our opinion, creates opportunity in places like Irvington, who have, you know, majority homeowners, majority Black neighborhood, these other five neighborhoods are majority white. So, you know, in some sense, there's a mental redlining there that still exists. But then also there's a gap of skilled individuals like ourselves that are willing to take the risk to put a deal like that together. So we can't blame others if we cannot blame ourselves for the compliant conditions that we have. So that project in particular will have, you know, 53 units, like I mentioned, a gym, which is an amenity of a building that size is a great amenity. You don't really get that. A community, a space that's about 1,300 square feet. And then what we'll have, which is the first food forest that's in a multifamily development. And I don't mean like, you know, urban farm and garden. There will be some raised beds. But what I mean by food forest is passively being able to go pick fruit, blueberries, peaches, apples, where now it's a place not just for education of how to feed yourself, but a place to commune, right? So are we creating buildings as a product, or are we creating communities, right? So for us, I think all our buildings have that consistent note of community and creating moments where we can touch. So that's one of them. Down the street, we're still in this neighborhood called Irvington. We'll have 85 unit development, a little bit higher mixed use development that will have all those same amenities that we have, but the only difference, it will be 4 stories taller, right? Wow. And you will have downtown views, and you'll have the same, you know, geographic amenities that we'll have. And then we'll have one of the, Baltimore has one of the like biggest, what's called redevelopment areas in the state of Maryland called Park Heights. It's the biggest in the area. So if there's a place that needs to be redeveloped in Maryland, Park Heights is one of them. That's why I was just at the Preakness this weekend. The Preakness is where everybody converges every year for the second jewel to Triple Crown, mm-hmm. right? So we have the biggest private development that will happen in Park Heights, right? All the public developments that have happened are happening now, but we'll have the biggest private development to date and the first private transit-oriented development at Rogers Avenue Station. So that's 289 units, over 10,000 square feet for commercial, and we will house our office there as well. And that will serve as our headquarters as Park Heights comes through a resurgence. And I also am building my house right across the street, so I don't have
y'all just buying everything.
Yeah. You're not done.
Right. Yeah. So and then we have, you know, we're downtown. We have a 25 unit mixed use building downtown. Being from Baltimore, it's a dream of mine to have something on West Baltimore Street, right? You know, just to be on the street named after the city is extremely important. We're right near downtown district where the Ravens play, the Orioles play, the new entertainment district and with Paramount Theaters, Top Golf, Hammer Jacks, which was a Baltimore staple when we were young, as well as Horseshoe Casino, right? We're 4 minutes away from 95, which will take you all the way to BWI, which will take you to the port, which can get you all the way to New York so we can come see you and your family in Brooklyn, right? So we have, you know, I have others that we could talk about. Those are the main ones I want to highlight because I think it's extremely important for people to see that we are, you know, really, most people have been developing on the west side and down, east side and downtown, but we've taken our flag and moved it to the west side where we grew up and just making it, changing these communities that are very, very special, mm-hmm. right? But yet haven't had people put the time into it. So we've really put the time in and really put our dollars to work. And I spend, you know, because I am on the ground, about 20 to, you know, 25 hours a week in all these communities, not just, you know, doing lift service, but doing heavy lifting, whether that be, you know, youth and violence prevention, whether it be me sitting down with a neighbor who wants to know what's going on, right? And that could be in the nicest neighborhood or it could be in the trenches. It doesn't matter to me, the venue, but it's our job to go in and immerse ourselves in the community so we can actually rebuild it up and listen to the people and what they want.
Got you. So here's a big question, Nigel. How much you got to raise?
It's a couple million dollars, man. That's it. It doesn't take much. No, I'll say like some of it's luck. And I would say the other side of it is that wind's really good. You know, when you're working with someone that's a visionary and can really turn and literally dirt right into a diamond, it makes my job a lot easier, right? You talk about someone that just is so knowledgeable about the area. Yes, I'm from the area, but I have the privilege of living in Miami, living in LA, right? Traveling the world and seeing different places in the world. It doesn't take much, right? I think that our community especially is looking for this, right? I think that the time is now. It's more people that have money, have resources that want to figure out how to dispose of these resources, but not just place this capital anywhere. Like, I think that we do a good job of focusing on the service of the neighborhood and being able, like, I think that Winfield is underplaying what's actually happening, where when we're in these communities, we're walking with the community leaders, we're walking with the police officers, we're walking and working with the churches, right? The key here is to understand, what does the community need? It's not our job to just put up 85 units here or 50 units there. It's our job to be able to understand, what is this community missing? Can we put a product in the community that we would want to live in? Right. I mean, I think that we were just talking the other day with our architects, and we're looking at the one hotel in South Beach. We're looking at the one hotel over in New York, and we're saying, what conceptually Why does it feel the way that it feels when you walk into these buildings? Well, how do we bring that same feel? How do we bring that same aesthetic back to LA? Right? We're going to, like, by the end of 2024, we're going to have two restaurants in Baltimore. What does that cuisine look like? Mm. How do we want that food to taste? How do we want you to feel? What's the energy when you walk into these places? Well, we got to go see the world and feel that out. Then we also got to talk to our investors. We also have to talk to the community, right? We also have to understand what makes the most sense for a downtown Baltimore cuisine. What's a Baltimore style development, but also what's it mean to have a Baltimore style cuisine that people will come from all over the world and want to not only live in our buildings, but also visit our buildings and tell the world about how great the city is.
Yeah. And I would say we're also in a unique time, right? You know, credit crunches from banks because of bank runs, right? Interest rates rising to some highest levels, you know, in a while and fastest pace ever, right? So it's not, most people say it's not an ideal time to be doing what we're doing, right? But I think what development allows you to do is to think long term, right? These projects don't happen overnight. And I think that's one of the key things that what we try to do, and I think where I try to make Nigel's job easier, is that we try to be prepared. So if you come and you invest with us, you go in our data room, you know, you have, you know, mountains of data. And I hope people would read the 200-page due diligence report that I put together. We would say that most people do not, but I hope people do. Hope people go through our pro forma that we update every week and add new things based on feedback from underwriters, from other equity investors and things like that, to be able to answer questions. Our job is really to answer the questions, to manage the risk. I think what I try to do to make it easy for Nigel is to give him all the ammo. So if you have a question, hey, just go to page 17, paragraph 6, and I will answer your question. So I can point you to the direction where you can verify. And this comes from the appraiser background. We want you to be able to verify with fact whether we are right or not. And what me and Nigel always tell people is, take whatever we sent you to the smartest person you know. So let's say that, you know, smartest person you know is Barry Sternlicht, who owns Starwood. Go to him and tell him, rip it apart. Tell him, give us the most critical feedback. The reason why we want that is because iron sharpens iron. So if you come to us with feedback, all I'm going to do is go back in the lab and go get better. Now your questions are answered. So if you want, and I think this is extremely important, if Nigel's asking you to invest in a team and the person who's on the ground isn't thinking like that, then now this is the reason why we have, you know, a certain sentiment towards investing with people in our community, because there has to be an amount of passion and care for what you're doing. If you're not, like, I'm not saying everybody has to want to be the best at something, but what I am saying is if you're not going to do it yourself and give it to somebody, you probably want to give it to somebody who's committed to being the best, right? And we all want to act like that's not hard to see, but it's very easy to see, because if you're looking at it, you know what it is for somebody that you know that's committed to this. And I think, you know, for us, we want everybody involved, not just our team, but anybody invest with us, to be committed to that, right? And we don't look at it as just us doing a service for you. You're doing a service for us as well, and we're all working together. This is really the ultimate team sport for us, right? Is just putting everything together, working with everybody to get things done. And, you know, if it's 2 million or 200,000, you need, you know, a group of people trying to get it done.
Definitely. And I like that you mentioned take it to the smartest person you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, the reality of it is, like, you know, there's funds and different things like that, and people are actually encouraging people to do the opposite. And, hey, just trust me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I would think as you're talking to investors and things like that, if that's your approach,
yeah,
I would assume it helps people to trust you and trust that, you know, y'all have integrity and, you know, you're serious about what it is you're doing.
Totally. No, and I think that exact phrase that you made, just trust me, is the one that we run away from. So it's very easy. Easy is not the right word. Over a period of time, we've built a very strong brand, both Winfield and I, because we have consistently been able to succeed outside of just real estate. But like, just the body of work that you have been able to display over, let's just say, 10, 15 years has allowed us to be able to get people to just trust us. Where we want to stand out is we don't want you to just trust us. We want you to be able to look at the data, look at the research, and understand why you made that decision. Why is that? Well, the reason being is we use our money too, right? Like we like as much as we want our investors to get a return, selfishly, we want to get a return on our money, right? A lot of these deals, we have a lot of our money tied up into these deals. So just trust me, doesn't work. And I still get nostalgic when I'm putting my money out, when I'm actually going to the bank and I have to write that check and do that direct deposit. There's no just trust me. It's page 17, paragraph 6 is why I'm able to put my money out. And I understand a timeline. I want to continually, like, because what we believe is a big part of what we have to do is to educate our people and be a resource. Like, that's the service that we also must provide. Yes, there's service in being in the community, but there's still a level of service that you have to add where we're constantly learning.
Yeah, and it's like bad habits. Like, mm-hmm. we don't want our community getting bad habits, mm-hmm. right? And I think this is why what you do is so important, because it shows people, hey, let me learn so I don't get into bad habits, right? And I think it's a bad habit for somebody to say, well, I know Sam, I know Nigel, I'm just going to trust them. It's a bad habit. Maybe, you know, it's not important to some people, but I think it's extremely important for people to go through a proper due diligence process and know what that looks like, right? And if you can go do that, then I know that the trust is in the deal. And then, of course, you can say, all right, I trust you guys, right? On the outside of that. But I've done the work so I could say, okay, even though I trust them, this is my worst case scenario. So if they could be telling me all great things, but what's my worst case scenario? So I think that's one of the big things, just preventing bad habits. That's why we tell people, go take it to, go do your own due diligence, because we don't want you to trust us. We want you to go through good due diligence process. So then when you, somebody else who wants you to trust you, you can say, okay, what is that cap rate? Okay, what's the NOI, right? What's the cost of construction?
I think you do a good job of talking about the risk as well.
Risk is the one thing, right? Yeah, you got to know. You have to know.
You can lose it all. Yep.
Definitely. No, I'm telling you, I really do appreciate that, because it's crazy out here.
Yeah.
You know, and people are just giving their money to whoever and just believing what people say. But there's something to be said for guys who are saying, this is the information. You go verify it yourself. We'll give you everything, 200 page report, all this stuff. And if it looks good to you, let's do it. You know, so I definitely appreciate that.
And even making sure that we paper up correctly, right? I don't want you to give me anything without receiving something back in return, mm-hmm. right? So just having that private placement memorandum, right? Understanding what your equity share is, understanding what the cap table actually looks like. We want to be completely transparent. We want you to understand the purchase price, right? We're not telling you that we purchased at a number. No. We will show you exactly what we purchased at. You will be able to see line item what the use of funds are. So I think that, you know, full transparency is also really important in this business, because it's not always done that way, you know?
Yeah, it's not.
Sounds crazy, but it's not always done that way, right?
So. Definitely. So what was the document you just mentioned?
Private placement memorandum.
What does that mean?
So basically, if a person is investing into a deal, right, what we want to do is we want to make sure they understand how many units in the deal they own. So let's just mm-hmm. say I'm taking an investment of $5,000 and each unit is $1,000. You now own 5 units, and the total units is the total units, which is very similar to what we've seen on the stock market, mm-hmm. right? So in a stock market, people typically will make their investment. They're buying shares. You're buying shares within this property, which has a value. Each share has a value, which then gets you equity into the deal. And then again, now we start to talk about paper returns and all those other, you know, great things that I think is really beneficial, but it's not always talked about in our community, and how to best leverage paper returns, or what it even means to have a high net worth, or what a net worth even is as a whole.
Yeah. And breaks down as well the business itself. What are we going to be doing? Right. It breaks down the risks. You have to have the risk factors in. It's a legal document that really just goes through everything about the deal.
Yeah, he's talking about the operating agreement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like everything about the deal is it should be in there. Right. So it's all this stuff we should know. Right. And it should be available. Right. Before you do anything. I think anybody that sends, because we can send, I can send deals every day. Right. And so if I do get the chance, I try to stay sharp and look at everything. Like, I'm asking people, hey, do you have this? I give them a checklist of things. Hey, is all this here? Okay, if that's there, then, you know, I've even seen deals where there's only like offer memorandum or a deck, but I can't see the pro forma. I don't know what your assumptions are. I don't know anything. So it's, I see stuff all the time and I get asked questions all the time about certain things. And when I go through it, sometimes it's not that things don't pencil out, but it gives you certain questions ahead of time that you need to answer before you do anything.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. So if someone is, let's say someone's looking to develop, right, in Baltimore, let's just use that for an example. What are some of the numbers and all those things that people are looking at? Because, I mean, usually it's just like a plot of dirt, but what all goes into it?
Yeah, so I can really kind of walk everybody through my process. I guess this isn't really secret sauce at all, right? Because you still have to do the work. But my mindset is always on highest and best use, right? That term in itself is, what can we do? What's the highest and best use from a feasibility standpoint, a legal standpoint, a zoning standpoint, a physical standpoint? How can we, you know, bring this property to its highest and best use and its current use and its highest and best use? So what I do is I scour the zoning map, the neighborhoods for properties that are not in their highest and best use, right? And that we can put, you know, high density, which means high unit counts or residential unit counts or commercial, so mixed use, it could be retail and residential on a property. And then that would let me know what the value is. So I always go back to that baseline of value. Okay, we find a property, and we can give an example of a property in Irvington. We do not own this one. It's a retail shop. They paid $1.2 million for it, but it's 3 acres, and you can put 400 units on it. Mixed use. And they bought it for $1.2 million, and you know, that in itself is the retail space of where it is. It's four retail spaces. That's not the highest and best use. So even if we bought it for $3 million from them, it's probably worth 15. So what we try to do and focus on is, can we, you know, in Baltimore, the average, you know, price per unit that people buy at is about $30,000 to $50,000, you know, give or take, depending on location. What we've done is we bought things in an average of $3,500 a unit. So usually, and this is what Nigel talked about, like paper returns, usually what we buy is, you know, at a discount because the current use is not the highest and best use. So what we know is that people are selling it for its current use, but we're buying it for its highest and best use. So in a sense, we take advantage of dislocation of whether it be information, right? Whether it be, you know, just somebody who wants to sell and they're motivated to sell, but they're not doing that back end due diligence. But then also people do know, but it's a neighborhood that you don't have ties to, but we do, and we can go in and do that. So I think it's just us really doing a great job of identifying, you know, great properties and then taking advantage of it. And I think our biggest issue that we have today is we just don't have enough equity capital to buy all the properties that we have. I probably have 50 just in Baltimore City alone that you can do, you know, that thousands deal. Of units, right? In neighborhoods that we're already in and neighborhoods that we're looking to go in as well. And that's just in West Baltimore. I'm not even going to the other side of the city, north, south or anything, just in West Baltimore, right? So I think that comes down for us just from, like, you know, really the appraisal, but that's really how we looked at finding these properties. And then you just go through the normal, you know, entitlement process, design, civil engineering, you know, making sure if it needs to be rezoned, going through that, you know, process. And in Baltimore, it's more political. That's more political than and legal than it is just, you know, going to a council and saying, hey, we want to rezone it. You have to get real community buy-in to do something like that. And then you have to have a legal case to do it. Yeah. And then the city council has to vote. So it's just a lot of different dynamics that creates a natural barrier to entry in Baltimore for that regard. So I would say that's kind of the process we go through. Mm-hmm. And for me now, and I don't care what city it is, it probably would take, you know, I could probably find properties in every city, probably take me 2 hours. I could probably find, you know, two or three properties that are in that criteria that we just mentioned.
Got you. When you say equity capital, what does that mean for those who may not know?
So as equity capital, if you have a capital stack, usually it's filled with a couple different things, right? You have debt, which is what you get from a lender, right? I go to, let's use an example. I'll use somebody that we are not currently using. Let's say we go to M&T Bank. Our stadium's named after M&T Bank. Let's say we go to M&T Bank. They'll give us a construction loan, or and that is the debt, right? That loan is the debt. Then you have, like, you know, what you can have is preferred equity, which is they'll come in the middle and fill that gap. And then you have, like, common equity, which is essentially, like, I look at all this stuff as, like, people are giving you money and loaning you money in a sense, but equity is the lowest level on there, but it's pretty the one that gets the highest return, right? So if you want to get a high return, usually you try to get in the equity portion of the capital stack, because you would get a high IRR and a high return. Debt does not get a high return, right? But it gets the collateral and consistency and safety, right? But equity gets the high return. So usually that's how the capital stack is for us is mixed up. But that allows us to go get a construction loan, or buy the property, or do our soft costs and pre-development costs. So usually the equity capital is the source that allows us to purchase the property, that allows us to do all the pre-development work, and then fills the gap for whatever the bank can't do as far as for construction and permanent loan. So right now, I think we're being quoted that people want to be at 60%, 65% loan to cost, right? So that means we have to be at 35 to 40% in equity capital, right? So filling that gap, and I think that's one of the most things that every young developer, a minority developer is looking for, which is that equity capital. You can go get debt from anybody, right? It's very, very easy to go get debt. Everybody's giving it out.
Yeah. Why do you think Black developers are struggling to get that equity capital?
I have a number of reasons. It's just tough, right? Like getting someone to believe in you early stage, right? I think that it's like anything else, right? I think that once you've developed 10 properties, there's a funnel, there's a pipeline of money, of institutions, of funds that are willing to write the check. I think the process that we're going through right now is that we're starting to meet with a lot of institutional funds, and they see the pipeline, right? They see the ability for them to be able to get into a city like Baltimore. They see the ability to be able to write a check, and let's just say, you know, whatever their return profile is, can we meet it? If the answer is yes, and you have capital that you have to place, well, if that money can't sit and we have what you're looking for, then you'll come into these different deals. The issue is, do we even want your capital, right? Are you the right partner for the projects that we have? And there's a timing align, right? Mm-hmm. As Winfield mentioned, like there's a timing component, right? This does not happen overnight. So what we've been able to do a good job of doing is we've been able to reach out to friends, family, and extension of both to be able to get that equity capital in, right? We've been able to make these different relationships to bring that equity capital in. When you talk about right now, we have six deals that we have a lot of capital tied up in. Mm-hmm. Well, when it comes down to deal, let's just say 7 to 10, where does equity capital come from? Mm-hmm. He has capacity to do more deals. I have to find capacity to go get more money. Mm-hmm. That's it.
And the check sizes is important as well. Like, I think one of the things that has happened now is that because there's been a swell of capital going into funds that need to place equity, because they want to place as much as possible in one sitting, they're not going and saying, all right, well, you have $5 million that you need. I'm going to give you $5 million. They're like, well, I want to do it. Love the numbers, but I need a deal that's $30 million. Right. I need $30 million to put in, or I need $15 million to put in. So I think what's happened is there's a dislocation in, you know, where people should place capital, especially on the smaller size deals, which, you know, I think walking down, I've had a stat where it's like 90% of real estate deals are under $100 million. And then it's like something like 97% is under 50. So it's like, you know, the spaces that we're playing in right now, that's probably where majority of real estate deals are happening, right? So I think that there's a, you know, institutionalization that becomes a barrier for Black developers and investors that want to do larger deals, mm-hmm. but they're not institutional size deals. Mm-hmm. Because then once you get to that size deal, what they're going to say is, well, you never did that size deal before. Mm-hmm. So then it becomes a which one comes first, mm-hmm. right, type of situation. So I think I've seen a lot of individuals do this, which is they, like Nigel mentioned, go out and figure out how to pool the capital together, right? Figure out who to talk to, and just get as many people as possible to get those deals done. And I think that's really the biggest problem I see, is just that the deals are not at the institutional level, so you can't go there, or we don't have the ability to raise a fund. I mean, we've been talking about, like, even becoming a REIT. You need a particular, you know, size to be a REIT or go public as a company to be a real estate investment trust, right? So I think that's the biggest thing.
Definitely. So Nigel, what's that conversation like with investors? So you mentioned the three deals in the pipeline and six deals going on. What's that conversation like, that first conversation when you're telling somebody about this opportunity?
Yeah. So I'm always curious, why? Why real estate?
Yeah.
Put your money anywhere. Go buy ice cream shop. You know, why real estate? What are you actually looking to get out of this experience? I think it's a consultative approach. I think that us understanding why real estate allows us to be able to map the right project to their investment criteria. Everyone can't necessarily hold their money for 2 years into a deal. I get that. At the same time, there are people that have capital that have, like, at, you know, at the retail level, have capital that they do want to put into deals, or they do want to, let's just say, go get what I call a G-Wagon or a Lamborghini, right? Well, what's that investment look like? Because so often I see us, we show a lot of our money and we show our Lamborghini, we show our G-Wagon. We may put $25,000 down here, $50,000 down here, or we may go out and go buy a house. Let's just say we take a FHA and we go buy a house, $15,000 down payment. Is that the highest and best use of the capital? Does it make more sense, maybe, to invest into a 53-unit property that allows you to be able to supplement some of that mortgage or some of that rent that you may have? I'm one that always believes that things aren't necessarily too expensive. It's about how we go about purchasing them. So the way that I've been able to start with a lot of my investors is, well, can I help you remove your car payment? If I can help you figure out a way to remove a $500 car payment by placing some capital that you may have spent on vacation or elsewhere, you'll probably want to, at refinance, when I give you your money back, you'll probably want to give it back to me and say, hey, look, well, my young kid that I now have, I'm planning for their future and they're going to want to go to college. Can I give you X amount of dollars again in order to be a part of the next deal and the next deal and the next deal? And I think that what's the most shocking thing that I hear, when I'm giving you this money, I'm giving you this money so that you can put it in the next deal, in the next deal, in the next deal. And that's how I think we all started investing, was maybe it was stocks, maybe it was a loan, right, to someone that you know, and it's like, hey, well, I'm giving you this money, I'll get a 10% return. Oh, wow, hold up. I made money without having to actually flex my muscle and do things, right? Well, now you have an opportunity where you have access to developers that are doing projects that you can now focus. Like, what the number one thing I say in LA is, man, I have some friends that are amazing actors. You guys are amazing actors. You guys, you know, wake up every day, you read your script, you go, you perform, but you probably know a little less on real estate than you do about acting. Why don't we take just a piece of that capital and move it into real estate? And you can be the best actor there is, and there can be no pressure in between movies and in between gigs. And you can place that capital with us and we'll give you some monthly dividends. Now you're being paid monthly while you can really focus on being the best version of whatever profession it is. You don't have to be an actor to invest. You don't have to be an actor to also be interested in real estate. Right. Doctors are invested and interested in real estate. Politicians are invested in real estate. So regardless of what your profession is, if you have an interest in real estate, it's our job to be able to provide the service of education to you so that we can get you involved in the right deal for you, whether that's with us or with someone that you know.
Definitely. I love that. And as far as you talked about earlier, like check size, is there like a range that people typically invest, or that you require, not require, but that is ideal for people to invest in some of the deals y'all have going on?
Yeah. So I think it's deal by deal, right? Deal by deal. It really ranges. Yeah. In the beginning, we saw our average right around about $10,000.
Okay.
Right. So about a $10,000 check can get you, you know, a decent amount of equity. But yeah. For us, what we wanted to do is we want to make sure that it's equitable for you, right? Yeah. Your expectation could be slightly off, right? I mean, I think that this is definitely a game where you have to put some capital, have some skin in the game. But, you know, if you put a little bit in, you'll get a little bit out. And that's not a disrespect to anyone's, you know, dollar amount. But if you put $1,000 into something, what return are we really looking to be able to get you, right? And it's not that there's nothing wrong with that. But what I always tell people is that, hey, look, the timing just may not be right. Doesn't mean that we can't still educate you. Doesn't mean that you can't still be in touch. Doesn't mean that we can't still walk you through the dynamics of a deal. This is great. You're interested. You have capital that you're willing to invest into something that you believe is a good fit for you. Let's continually talk. Let's continually make sure that you have done due diligence. You have the education so that when that dollar amount gets to 5,000, or maybe, hey, Sam, I have 5,000, you have 5,000. Bro, let's do it. Bro, we've been talking about this. Let's just now. You guys can maybe go through an LLC, however you guys want to structure it. Let's go get some real estate. Let's go do this, you know, so it can be done.
Definitely. I like that. And what I like is that, you know, there's probably a lot of people who, if you can't invest right now, all right, cool, next person. Yep. But you're smart because situations can change quick.
Oh, yeah.
Like someone's financial situation can change, or I mean, 5 years down the line, y'all still going to be doing this. So imagine you have somebody, you're educating them for the next 5 years, and you know, they're getting their money together, they're getting ready, and by the time they're ready, you got a deal going, you've built that rapport and educated them.
Yep.
And now they're ready to participate.
Yeah. So in my career, I started in tech sales. And when you're trying to get to a decision maker, you may send an email, right? Falls on deaf ears. Send another email, falls on deaf ears. My job is to educate. My job is to bring awareness. I need to make you smarter about real estate every single day. What am I doing every day to make you smarter about real estate? If I give to you, the chances are as you continually succeed in your career, as you continually get more knowledge, as you see your friends make money in real estate, because we live in this world where, oh, monkey see, monkey do, right? So as you see the success happening, as you see these projects start to erect, as you see these lives being changed, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think that bigger than anything, people will always see and feel impact. So when people see the community garden, they see, you know, community being built. One thing my dad used to always say is that our job is to put the neighbor back in the hood, because he grew up in a neighborhood. So we're building neighborhoods. We're building communities. So as we build these communities, as we have that impact, this is the brokest any of us will ever be. 10 years down the line, I'm 30 years old, we'll be 40. Is real estate still going to be relevant to all of us? Absolutely. So just because you cannot do business with us today, or you have not done business with us today, doesn't mean that we can't do business in the future. We treat our investors like our family because they believe in us. If you give me your time, you believe in us. If you give me your money, you really believe in us, right? Yeah. And we have a responsibility to you to return that capital.
Definitely, definitely. That sales background kicking in.
Yeah, that's all I know, man. That's all I know.
So when one of the things you mentioned was immersive development. So yeah. We'd love to talk some more about that.
Yeah, I think development has traditionally, you know, over the past, you know, let's say 50 years, has been more in the vein of heavy-handed. We're coming in, we're changing the neighborhood, we're not talking to anybody. We've had this situation in Baltimore where, you know, public-private partnership developer comes in, he says he's going to do one thing, does another, or he doesn't communicate with the community. They see him once, and the next time they see him, the bill is going up, right? That type of development is no longer applicable. And the reason why is because we all have cell phones. We all have access to information. And now with ChatGPT, Bard, we're going to start seeing our grandmothers, our mothers, our sisters and aunties go and type in, how is real estate development supposed to be done? We're going to start see people saying, what is a, you know, CBA, community benefits agreement? How, ChatGPT, can you write one for us? Right? We're going to start seeing people in more informed than they are today, and they're really informed today. Right? So what we looked at is, how can we do something like we're already doing, contrary to what the norms are, right? And I wanted to be, you know, come out of college, I wanted to go work for the State Department and be an economic officer in a foreign country. And I wanted to go in and convince people that, hey, we want to be able to buy your bananas or build a business here or bring this business here and do things like that. Now, the only way you do that is if you go amongst the people, listen, build rapport, and then start to bring things in at a particular pace. So the best, you know, I didn't get to fulfill that as of yet. So whenever, you know, somebody, you know, sees me 40 years from now, I'm Secretary of State, you'll know why. But I've been able to get, you know, do that in Baltimore. We have 250 neighborhoods, 250 tribes, I like to say, with all different cultures, mindsets, goals, and self-interest. So how do you go and convince somebody who hasn't had development, really hasn't seen it in their lifetime, if we're being honest? And the last development they saw was a project building that concentrated poverty in a particular place, watched the police leave, the jobs leave, and economics leave. And that was the last experience they had with development. Now, if I don't go and immerse myself in that community, learn who that person is, who their daughter is, right? Where they go to college. Why do you feel this way about development? There's no sit-down restaurant in the 8th District in Baltimore City. You want one? How can we get one? Oh, we have a property. We own this property. We can put one here. Let's go to lunch. What kind of food do you like? Oh, we can go there. Let's go there. We went there. What? You like this restaurant? Can we put something like that there? Let's go ask everybody else. Hey, I'm about to go walk on Saturday. It's 2 weeks ago. Let me knock on doors. Let me introduce myself. We're doing a development in your backyard. Oh, well, I don't want to sell my house. Because everybody thinks everybody wholesaling wants to sell their house. No, I don't want your house. I just want to introduce myself. Hi, my name is Wynn. We're doing a development. I have a package for you. Right? So I'm not coming empty handed. I'm always giving something. Put something in a hand. I have a package for you. I got a survey if you want to just do it really quickly so we know what you want, what you like. Do you want to give us some feedback right now? Can you flip through page to the page of the renderings? What do you think? Right? This is what I mean about immersive development. Going all the way deep in it, putting ourselves in the community. So not are we a developer coming in? No, we're you. No longer are you thinking developers coming in. And the reason why this is important, and we have this guide on our website about, you know, how to develop in black neighborhoods, right? One of the things, and this is how this concept was developed. My father started that concept. I've refined it. But one of the reasons why the concept was developed, because when I went to a community that looked just like us, I had a lady pray against our project. This is my first community meeting. This is about four or five years ago. Pray against. Imagine, I've been going to church all my life. And an 85-year-old woman, who's my elder, is praying for my downfall in front of my mother, my wife, my father, and my kids. Now, that's going to cause some cognitive dissonance. Am I even black? Or am I just a developer? Let's take a step further. Next meeting, a lady says, I don't believe in y'all. I'm just waiting for the white man to come out from behind y'all.
No way.
Mind you, we got that on camera.
You got to send me that. That's
I'm not going to send nobody that. I don't want to embarrass the lady because we're friends now.
Okay, good.
But we have it. It may come out in a decade from now, but we have it. This is what she said, right? And then my nephew comes up to me after and say, what white man was she talking about, Uncle Winfield? Right? I don't know. Right? Because she couldn't believe what we were doing. Right? So that emotional toll that it takes led me to say, the problem is that they've never seen it. We got to go in. So if we go anywhere, and I'm a big person when, you know, State Department has an embassy everywhere. Anywhere that you have interest in, they have an embassy. We have to place our flag in each neighborhood and put our embassy there. Who is our ambassador? Now we have a, you know, not a big team today, but right now I'm the ambassador, right? Right now. So we have to go to every community, build their relationships, build those rapport to the point where they get sick and tired of seeing me. Oh, he's here again. It's Monday. He's here again. Oh, he's on the community meeting again. Right? Get tired of seeing me. I'm at every event that you're going to be at. You're going to see me. I'm going to learn about you. I'm going to knock on your doors. And this is how that concept, because I couldn't believe that a son of Baltimore was getting disrespected by the mothers of Baltimore for trying to do the right thing, try to have impact. So that led me to say, is it them or is it that nobody's ever came in to not just educate, but to be a part of it? They don't feel a part of it. And if we are to sometimes lead our people somewhere, we got to sit down at the table with them and eat. Mm-hmm. Right? We have to break bread with them. So for me, that was the idea of immersive development, was that it came from pain of saying, am I even doing the right thing? Is this the right thing to do? Am I even black? Because I don't feel that way. That emotional toll is what led to us creating the framework. So now when we go to a community, you know, before we even buy a property, I'll probably the first 3 months, I'll know everybody in that community. I'll know every business and we'll be there in their faces right before we buy it, just to know if you want us here. And the good thing is that their reputation is starting to spread to a point even the city's like, oh, have you talked to him? And then somebody cut him off. Oh, no, he's already talked to him. Don't even worry about it. Right? And this is what, and now we're creating the standard.
Yeah.
You can't come in a black community in Baltimore, especially on the west side, if you're not going to do it like this. Right? And I would say we're probably the only private developer doing it on the west side. So when people start to follow, because like I mentioned, not too many leaders anymore. When people start to follow in, they're going to have to do it the same way. Or you're going to be the oddball. And your project will get delayed. Right? So this is the thing. This is the standard we're trying to create. And immersive development is not just something that we feel like we're doing. But I think everybody is going to start doing. And Chauncey Byers is doing it in Baltimore as well. Right? They're doing it. And they're in the communities doing it and doing the right thing. So this concept, I don't ever want to take credit for it, but I am going to take credit for refining it, right? We're going to refine that to where it becomes a standard.
Definitely. Is the approach that you guys have, do you think it can be replicated in different black communities across
it
the
will.
Country?
It will be. Not even a question. Yeah. Not even a question. It's we've already started setting the data of what communities need it. And I can say it, that similar to Baltimore, other cities, major cities, have similar problems of development only going in particular places and other places being neglected, right? That doesn't mean they're bad neighborhoods. What I think it is just, if I'm a white, old white guy, I'm not about to take that headache. I don't blame them. If you're 70 years old, 60 years old, if you're 40 years old, are you about to go and get up in front of, you know, 100 black people, have somebody pray against your project, and then get up there and start talking about how you're about to bring in market rate apartments or 100% affordable? No. It's probably easier just to go to a place where everybody else was at already. Right. So I think it's really, you know, it will be replicated. I think we'll start and spark it. But I think people are going to start doing it if they're not already doing it. I don't ever want to think we're the only ones doing it. But father used to say, he's like, if you thought about it, 1,000 other people thought about it as well. So I don't want to make it think like we want to be the best ones to execute it. But I think other people are doing it as well. I know they're doing it in Houston. I know there's some people doing it in Philly. Right. People are doing it. Right. I just think that to the level that we're doing, the extent that we're doing, I don't think there's anything yet, but I think we want to push people to replicate it. But we have the data to show like development's only going on this line next to these things and not coming over here or over here. Now let's look at the demographics. Not shocking, which demographics aren't getting things. Now, can we go and do that? And I think this, you know, I talk to Nigel about this all the time. I think this is a national security risk. Now, let's say China wants to go and give us $10 billion. And they've helped this particular neighbor, no different than the Belt and Road Initiative in Africa. And they come and help that. That kind of seems like a national security issue to me, right? And that's why people were saying in Texas, hey, we don't want people from China to come to buy these things, right? This is something that I think is extremely important. And I was just in Dubai in March, and I said this to a fairly wealthy individual. And I said, if you could go to emerging markets that had the United States legal system, all the infrastructure in the world, cheap land, high returns, wouldn't you do that? No offense to any other market around the world, but the biggest emerging market right now is the Black community. So if we're talking about smart capital allocation decisions, big institutions, I think they're missing the boat. And somebody's going to figure it out. And we're probably going to be one of the examples. So we want to attract capital to our communities, like we're saying. I think people need to pay attention to that fact, which is the biggest emerging market is the Black community as far as for real estate development.
Definitely. Appreciate that. So before we wrap, we'd love to hear from each of you. What are some tips you would have for someone who wants to do what y'all are doing, who wants to develop, who wants to be able to raise capital? Like what's some advice you would give to them?
Yeah, I mean, I would say on the capital side, it takes time. I think that you get a lot more no's than you do yeses. But I think that in my side, I'm always building a funnel. And building a funnel, again, isn't always, I don't ask of, but I'm giving you. I'm going to give you the information. I'm going to build the awareness. I'm going to show you some of the different things that you have the ability to be a part of. I think so often we come and we say, hey, I care about real estate. You should too. No. That's not how it works, right? But if I can give you information that you're asking me for, I can't tell you the amount of people that just ask and say, hey, when are you guys going to have another allocation that I can be a part of? Because we give so much, right? When we talk to our investors are so impressed that this man can eat lunch anywhere in the world, but he eats lunch in the community, right? So they understand the service and being able to provide a service. On the capital side, I'm constantly providing a service of awareness and education. And I believe that the more that we can educate our community to make the right decisions and make better decisions as far as due diligence, I think it puts us in a position to be able to be successful on a capital allocation and being able to put the right capital and the right people together for each deal.
Yeah, I think as far as for tips for me, I don't recommend doing it yourself, because, like, you know, I recommend always getting somebody that's done it before. But it's a couple of things. Figure out, the developer told me this maybe was 7 years ago before I did my first single family house. He said, figure out what you're good at, right? So if you're good at, you know, valuation, be the person valuation, be the deal guy. If you're good at capital raising, do capital raising. If you're good at, you know, construction, you gotta figure out what your niche is and then work with a team. So I would say get into the business as best you can, whether that be going and working for a developer or a large developer or for a private equity firm, to learn the finance background of how this works, right? Or going working for an underwriter that for commercial real estate, working for a construction company, right? And being a project manager or construction manager. I think it's just, what I would say is just learning whatever skill that goes through, that makes all of this work, right? Like, there's so many different people that are part of a development deal, right? And if you have ambitions to be a developer, one of those skills, you can get a lot of the rest of them, or you're gonna put together the team for the rest, because all the developer is, in my opinion, is a general manager. You put a team together, and then you try to make it work. So I would say is just learn one of those skills, learn how to manage people, but go and, you know, work with another developer or go learn from somebody. And just, you know, I think I was a little different. I committed all my time to reading anything there. And then even none of that was even relevant once you got into the game. But the language of it allows you to speak with people, for them to even partner with you, for you to, you know, be able to work with them or learn from them. So I would say, like, that's the big thing, like finding those skills and getting behind, you know, with somebody that has completed projects.
And I think you ought to give it time. right? I think one of my best friends, he always says is, you know, unlike college, we don't have 4 years. Mm-hmm. We're committed to Baltimore. We're committed to real estate. We're committed to development. I'm committed to making sure that I have the right people for the right deals. So when you look at life, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, you know where to find us, right? Our brand is going to be consistent. My role is going to be consistent. His role is going to be consistent. The only difference is we're going to keep bringing in the right partners to be able to execute on these deals.
Definitely, definitely. Man, this has been a great interview. I think it's been great to hear the journey, great to hear what y'all have in the pipeline. I really like how involved y'all are in the community and you're on the ground and not just throwing buildings up, but you're really getting feedback from people, the capital tips. I mean, there's just so much great information in this interview, so I know people are really going to enjoy it. And before we wrap, can you each let people know where they can keep up with you, where they can reach out to you, and all that good stuff?
Yeah, the easiest way to find me is on my Instagram. So it's Nigel, N-I-G-E-L, Sydnor, S-Y-D-N-O-R. I'm placing real estate videos up every day. Anything that I'm reading, less on the news side, more on the technical education side, because I want, very similar to what Winfield said, I want people to be familiar with these terms, right? I think that when you go into any industry, you want to be able to understand the language. Real estate has a language. When you understand the language, understand the dialect, you have that ability to make the right decisions for yourself and for your family.
Yeah, I would say go to our company's website, bulldevco.com. Instagram is Win Willis. And then LinkedIn as well, because I think LinkedIn is an underrated tool. Like, you know, Winfield Willis the second. That's, you know, two, not like the actual two, but like two I's, I guess it would be.
Yeah.
Right? As a Roman numeral. But yeah, so that's where you can reach me, and you know, we're very you know, really easy to reach, right? But don't blow up me, blow up him. Right. I need to, you know, stay focused on the work that we're doing, and this is where everybody has their role and responsibilities of what we're trying to get accomplished.
Definitely, definitely. And thank you everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. If you're on YouTube, make sure you like, make sure you subscribe, share this with someone who could find this valuable. If you're on audio, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.